Hey listeners, before I get into this episode, I have a quick ask to make. I started this podcast as a research project on how to be a top individual contributor in the product design space. My goal for the show was to learn what it takes to be an individual contributor that is doing amazing, impactful work that they love doing day in and day out and getting paid top dollar while they do it. Becoming that type of individual contributor is the ultimate job security. With close to 100 hours of interview recordings, this has naturally led to the creation of the short-form video articles that synthesize my learnings into 10-minute listens of actionable content. You might recognize these as my morning walk episodes or the hashtag shorts episodes. To my surprise, those episodes have been very well received and listeners have enjoyed the synthesis of what I've learned. This has led to the next chapter of my research project, which is beginning to synthesize what I've learned into a new newsletter called Thinking Out Loud About Design that you can subscribe to right now for free. Thinking Out Loud About Design is an email newsletter and podcast that basically contains all my synthesis for my long-form interviews. It's pure distilled learnings that you can apply to your career immediately. This content is for you if you are a couple years into your career and you're trying to make that move from mid-level to senior designer and senior designer to staff designer. I mainly focus on becoming high-performing individual contributors in the product design industry. A free subscription gives you full access to the newsletter, podcast episodes, and website. You won't have to worry about missing anything because every new edition of the newsletter goes directly into your inbox. So my ask is this. If you have gotten any value out of the way of product design, or if it's helped you in any way or someone you know, please subscribe to Thinking Out Loud About Design and get the distilled learnings on being a staff-level individual contributor. You can find a link to the newsletter in the show notes of every episode of this podcast and on my LinkedIn page. Just look up Caden Damiano. Thanks again for listening and supporting the way of product design. I wouldn't be doing this if you guys weren't listening. Now, on to the show. Welcome to the Way of Product Design. I'm Caden Damiano. We know design is valuable, but how can you unlock its true value and tie your design work to business impact? This show interviews product designers, product managers, and tech leads from places like Google, Domo, Divi, IBM, Intuit, and Uber to find out what makes a valuable product designer and how you can be one as well. Hey listener, this is going to be a really interesting episode because we're going to talk about designing for big technology platforms. My guest today is Patricia Dwyer. She is a content designer on Intuit's platform team. I'm really excited to have her on here because I know that there's just this huge shift in how companies are evolving into technology-powered businesses and services. And like that platform architecture, that model is really like a great way to package multiple offerings and multiple products under one company so that a customer could get a ton of value out of just one business for different pain points and value propositions. So Patricia, could you just quickly introduce yourself to the listener and just tell them what you're all about, you know, and how you got to where you're at?
Hello, listener. My name is Patricia, like you've heard. I'm a senior content designer at Intuit. I started my journey at Intuit over in consumer groups, so working on products like Mint and Turbo and TurboTax, doing everything from marketing emails to in-product stuff, leaning really big in on tax reform. And so that's really where I cut my teeth. And for the last year and a half, I've been on the platform team, as you heard, doing platformy. I'm the first content designer in this space, sort of carving for that craft in the platform arena and doing my best to create a strategy that resonates with all my stakeholders so we can make it come to life.
So when you're in the platform space, is it a lot more strategic work?
Yes, for a lot of different reasons too. So just really clear, really quickly, when we're talking about like platforms,
Other folks might call it design.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
So folks might also think of it as like ecosystem design. The example I like to give is of what like our ideal state is like think of Google. Google's got a bunch of different products, but they all feel like Google. You don't think I'm in Maps, I'm in Gmail. Like, your expectation is that these things are talking to one another and that the benefits that you'll experience are sort of shared across each of those things. They don't feel like siloed products, because Google has really solid platform and ecosystem design going on. And that's sort of where a lot of companies are headed now, specifically with the use of data. So as it pertains to Intuit, a lot of folks don't realize you don't have a TurboTax account and you don't have a QuickBooks account. You have an Intuit account. You are signing into Intuit when you sign into any of those products. Historically, it's been a very siloed experience. Do you feel like I'm in TurboTax right now? I'm in QuickBooks right now. And, you know, largely that's still the case today, but the future for most companies right now is a less siloed experience and more of powering that use of data across the entire company to, just as you said before, really hone in on that customer benefit, bringing those value props to life. Does that explain what that is?
No, I think that was a very eloquent breakdown of like what a platform is. Is like platform design is really just your design problems are the ecosystem. How does the ecosystem work together? And
like,
how do you centralize customer data so that you can seamlessly take on other value propositions? So you might be a TurboTax customer, but that might eventually lead to you starting your own business, and then onboarding onto QuickBooks is pretty slick, right? It's like you have like all these values, and maybe like one product's like your gateway drug. And if you've listened to the podcast before, there is a what sounds like a bird in the background. That's my son making an elephant noise. But I think that's part of the brand, so I keep it in.
Amazing.
And it's also too much work to edit out.
I like it.
But the customer benefit of just being able to, you know, you like Intuit's products, you like TurboTax or Mint, and then you're like, oh, I wonder what they like send you an email saying like, hey, also you could use you just acquired Credit Karma. Now you just onboard Credit Karma onto your platform, and I'm sure there's like a process to like onboard new acquisitions to the platform and make it Intuit-y, I guess. You Intuitize it and you attach it to the Intuit account and stuff like that. Another cool thing I've noticed with platforms is it allows you to make better strategic partnerships with other companies. So like, for example, Wealthfront allows you to integrate with your Intuit account. And and that being able to be a platform design, like a platform architected business, just allows you to like, the possibilities are just endless. You can make more products, you could partner with more companies. I just think it's so awesome.
Yes. Yes to all of those things. And you know, it could show up in even more nuanced ways that you might not even think are super bright and shiny, but you talked about onboarding, for example. Right now, if you're a TurboTax customer and you tell us all about yourself in TurboTax, and then you want to use Mint as well, better get ready to tell us all about yourself all over again. So there's simple problems like that can be solved with this sort of functionality, and really leaning into like, we know you, we already know you, and giving the customer that sense of like, we're smart, we're here for you, we got your back. And those same sorts of data plays totally feed into that. So a lot of folks think about, the bright and shiny, like insights and recommendations, but honestly, there are just so many ways to simplify the customer experience going this direction that might not be like super apparent.
Yeah. I mean, if you do really good platform design, this removes the need for a lot of UI. And I think that scares designers.
Totally. But your original question before I started like babbling about Google, was whether or not it's like a more strategic space. And I want to say yes, but at the same time, when you're working in product, like a very robust design team, like if the QuickBooks content design team is, and the TurboTax content design teams, like that's a lot of people there, and they are focusing solely on the words on these screens and making them like the most awesome words. And they're the smartest people when it comes down to like getting the perfect words on these screens. My job in the platform team is different than that. I do focus a lot on the words on the screens, but that is not the extent of impact that content design stands to make in that space. So to your point earlier about UI, no UI being like the best solution probably for a platform team and working really closely with engineers to understand what are our tech limitations right now? Okay, like, can I introduce a new use case for this thing? Can we, you know, personalize it in this way? What's the overhead to talk to these people differently in this situation? And really feeling out sort of the tech and partnering really closely with engineers, because it's all happening. You know, like, I'm designing it, they're building it, like, we're kind of working in parallel all the time. And really leaning in to craft that conversation, not just from the word choice on the screen, but, you know, the variations of a given screen and what personalization can look like for a given experience. Did that make sense?
Yeah. So it's really like it is like systems design. I was listening to the New Layer podcast, and Jasmine Friedel, head of design, I think she's head of design or maybe like a director of design for Dropbox. She talks about how like systems design isn't design systems. It's designing how the technology works, like how the system works, like how should it behave. Yeah. It's almost, and I feel like not even just for platform design, but I feel like that's the job of designers, content designers, product designers.
It ought to be.
Yeah.
If it's not, like, you should ask.
Yeah, like
ask because, if you can get your hands on that.
Because that's in that podcast, they're saying that it's like one of the most underrepresented skills, even in senior designers, is not thinking systematically about your work and like how your solution will impact other teams' work, because it has ripple effects through the technology we base our front end UIs on. Is if you don't know how the technology works, you can't power really great experiences.
Yeah. That is the name of the game, which I play in my space, certainly, is it's all systemization all the time. And, you know, I was talking about our product design teams that are dedicated to QuickBooks or TurboTax, and they focus more on bespoke experiences. So spending a lot of time, like when I was a lead content designer for tax code updates that happened in 2018. I was a lead content designer to sort of make those sweeping changes across TurboTax. And, you know, I spent a lot of times doing bespoke content design, focusing on the mortgage deduction flow specifically. And there's nothing systemized about that, but you need that customer empathy there.
Yeah.
So systemization isn't necessarily the answer all the time, especially in our products. But in the space that I am in now, certainly. And building that system is specifically for our authentication with, so identity proofing. That means sign in, create account recovery. It could also show up downstream. Say you're in QuickBooks and you want to access a part of the product that's super sensitive. We need to make sure that you're you again. So those widgets, those I spend a lot of time partnering very closely with our engineers to, you know, exactly what I was rambling about before, teasing out like, okay, it says this now, but like it really ought to, trying to think, okay, so a given widget might say the same thing for a user who's trying to sign in and a user who is super downstream in QuickBooks and trying to access another part of the product. Historically, it would say the exact same thing. My role is sort of say like, no, like when they're signing in, the security benefit is sort of inherent. You just want to keep them moving. They just want to get into their product. But if we're slowing them down in the middle of something, you ought to explain why that it is, or we're making them do more work right now. We need to introduce some code complexity. We need to have another variation here because the content doesn't make sense otherwise. And on top of that, I need to document it in a way that makes sense to these engineers, so that they can build it correctly, understand where I'm coming from, and I can really make sure that that difference is, you know, made in a durable sort of way.
Yeah. That there's designers that are like, you know, there's, I mean, I don't blame them. And I've thought of this before, like, oh, you should give them a taste of the product first before they create an account. Right. But, and I'm currently working on a platform. That's why I'm so excited to talk to you, is we're putting authentication and identification, you know, like fraud prevention measures in the onboarding before they can even access any workflows in our product. And people are like, why are we doing that? You know, we should give them a taste first. And I just, my hunch is that in a platform, that stuff doesn't work. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do
that. So keep going.
Yeah. Like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like, how do you, like, in platform design, is it almost like paramount that like you have them authenticate and create an account first before they access the product? Or if there is ways to give them like a taste of the functionality of a product before they create an account and like get onboarded onto the like Intuit platform, like how does that work?
Yeah. So I would say it's not impossible, or it's not paramount that they create an account before they access stuff, before they get into product or really like see what the product's all about. It's definitely something that we're thinking about. I will say the design solutioning for something like that is not as complicated as the backend solutioning for something like that. You know, working with product teams, in addition to the engineers and the platform team, to make sure that customers aren't telling us information that's too sensitive. Like, we can't ask you for something super sensitive and plug that in and show you some neat functionality without making sure you're you first, without locking that down and giving you sort of a secure experience. Security and privacy is sort of the backbone of a lot of what we do, sort of that compliance lens, once you start thinking about identity proofing and authentication. So yeah, totally. It's something we want. We agree, like, it's a huge customer benefit to be able to experience the product before they have to do so much work and give us like their life story to create an account and get in there. So it's something we're thinking about, but yeah, the back end resourcing for that is much larger than the design resourcing, certainly.
Yeah, because like really like the front end for like a platform, like the patterns, the UI patterns that come to mind to like enable like a platform ecosystem is, you know, sign in screen, maybe an onboarding flow, password recovery, like you mentioned. Is there anything else I'm missing?
Yeah, we also, anything that comes from your Intuit account manager. Like so emails? Typically an account. So if you are in any Intuit product and you select Intuit account, I'm using finger quotes for folks who can't see Intuit account in the left navigation, it takes you to a space where you can manage all of the information that you shared with us. You know, your name, your address, update your password, your security settings, also all of your privacy settings and data governance actions. So deleting and downloading all of your data. And I know typically, if you look at benchmarks, that space, it's sort of like forgotten. It's sort of like a shadowy, dark shadow of whatever experience you're in. But we actually have a design team dedicated to that experience, and is actually a large part of building that ecosystem understanding for customers, to give them this centralized space where they can take an action that will impact multiple products. So building more and more of that ego, that Intuit brand that makes sense to them in an ecosystem sort of way. Obviously, that's not our burden to carry alone. There would be a lot of marketing and in product experiences to help build this too, but that's sort of our role in that.
Is the design system team and the team that manages like emails that would be sent out for password recovery or contextual experiences for like marketing, are they kind of like under that umbrella, or at least like organizationally in proximity to the platform team? She's shaking her head.
No, they're not. Our marketing teams are definitely doing their marketing thing.
Okay.
So
do you power
especially
their work?
No, no. Okay. We have a one Intuit notification platform that, you know, honestly, I haven't worked super closely on, but I know it's getting that more streamlined is in the works by another team that I am not on.
Yeah. I'm just curious because it's like if you need like reset a password or, you know, and I want to move on from like UI and stuff, but I just want to understand like the UI implications are very minimal when it comes to designing for a platform and an ecosystem. But like, here's like the minimum like needs to be there to like for data entry purposes and building out that customer mm-hmm. profile and stuff. Like, so do you? So you don't manage the content for the password recovery flow emails or?
Oh, I do. I do. Yeah. So when we start talking about marketing and product emails, those are different teams.
Yes.
But yeah, the password recovery flows, all of that. Yes.
Okay.
And I want to reiterate, I've been on the team for a year and a half. So if you're trying to recover your Intuit password and you see some janky email, it was not my fault. I've not been here long enough to don't blame it on me. I just got here. Someone else wrote it.
Yeah, disclaimer. Yeah. Patricia can't fix everything in a year, apparently.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to understand like any touch points. And then, so it's also the management of customer data. So that UI where you're managing like your Intuit account, if you want to like, you know, the new regulations, like delete all my data, like you would own mm-hmm. that UI pattern mm-hmm. as well and the content.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be like a micro front end that just kind of gets populated in QuickBooks and TurboTax and
that you would actually have to go to your Intuit account to access that functionality. So I mentioned we're working on, again, ecosystem mindset is something we think about a lot and how our team can help customers understand that their data is being used in this way. How can our experiences help bolster that understanding that when you share your information with any Intuit product, it is being stored in a centralized way to help power all these functionalities that will, you know, in turn help you power your own prosperity. That's sort of the goal of our team existing. So if you were in any Intuit product, you, again, like I was saying before, if you click on Intuit account from the navigation, it takes you to this centralized place that is not a dark, shadowy place. We try to make it a very conscious, friendly place, working on a lot of personalization there, and that's where you would access all of your data governance stuff. Also, with the data governance stuff, this last year and a half, I worked on redesigning Intuit's privacy and security websites. So if you go to intuit.com/privacy, everything you see there, I wrote or, you know, oversaw and tried to make it nicer. Just while we're talking about data, plug my own hard work there.
Nice. Yeah. Check it out.
Super cool privacy site.
Yeah, just post on a upvote site and give us some upvotes.
Go check out our security business, y'all.
Okay, so but you access that by clicking on like my Intuit account. You might like that there might mm-hmm. be like a link to it in all the different Intuit products. But it links out.
Yeah, we're trying to make that to continuous. We're trying to make it so in every product, the interaction to get to your Intuit account is the same. That's the goal.
Okay. So ecosystem mindset, like you don't want to have to put the burden of like designing how you navigate to your data governance flows on each individual team, because then they might come up with different solutions. You just say, hey, here is the content you need to put. It's probably just a button. Just put it. It's up to you guys where you put it in your product, but like, make sure they can get to it.
It's not super up to them. It is like we collaborate, but the whole goal is that if I'm in TurboTax or if I'm in QuickBooks, I know I'm interacting with Intuit, and so the idea of having similar navigations across those products and similar interactions in those like anchored navigation elements. So the goal is to have like a single spot in that navigation that is very similar across all of our products to access your Intuit things. Again, think of Google. When you're in Chrome, when you're in Chrome, you know, you go to the right-hand corner. That's where you know that you can switch your accounts and hop into a different Google product. Yeah, I sound like I have such a crush, but honestly, it's just like the best example of like when you talk about ecosystem design, they're just all the money there.
Well, they're trendsetters, right, when it comes to that kind of stuff. Like, I'm sure you get a lot of inspiration from how they do it for your work as well. But I'm glad I asked that, because then I'm sure a lot of your work is like making sure that across all products, when you're collaborating, I'm sure you like collaborate with the Mint team and the TurboTax team, right? When there's like a big initiative, making sure that the navigation is intuitive across all the products. Yeah. So you can't have like different kind of nav bar styles across the products, or it's not going to feel like the same company. So that's big too.
Yeah. And that's a design system goal too. And it's a lot of relationship building, because honestly, we've all got different stuff that we're working on. A Mint team isn't there every day thinking about ecosystem. They're thinking about helping their customers find the right, you know, solutions for their financial situation. Mm-hmm. So when we come over there talking about Intuit accounts, they're like, Intuit what? Like, we've got our own stuff that we're working on. So there's a ton of relationship building and making sure everything we do is customer backed, because that's sort of our common language, regardless of what product you're on or what your goals are. If you can articulate why this is important for the customer and how this is going to benefit our customers moving forward, that's where we find our common ground and where we can move forward to find solutions that we can all feel good about.
Cool. So it's up to you guys to worry about how everything works together as an ecosystem. So it kind of removes like the burden on these more specific product teams to focus on more like bespoke, very like customer centric type content and experiences and stuff. And I'm sure when you create new functionality with your engineers. So like, let's get away from the UI. Let's talk about like, how can we make this data structure so that we could power like really cool experiences in the products. Totally. Do you then go to like a Mint and say like, hey, you know, you guys could do this experience now because we.
Yeah, that's a lot of it. You know, little history on how our team even came to exist. So we're in an organization that used to just be engineers, and the engineers were building APIs that would be ingested by the product teams. Yeah. So, you know, ways to surface data in a customer facing way. But the product teams, you know, everybody kind of codes differently. Every team is a little different. So the overhead to ingest these APIs and get them to work in their designs was like a bit too much. So then they took it up a notch and our organization began just like making widgets. So widgets were just sort of like grouping APIs to make it easier for the product teams to just plug and play, plug in, get it? Anyways, so then you need a design team to help put, you know, the interface on top of that widget. And the benefit of that is just continue to grow and grow and grow. So the design team has been growing rather quickly. So taking this centralized expertise and this centralized use of data, and exactly how you were saying before, our role in doing that is really powering the product teams to benefit their customers how they need to. But having this expertise, this design expertise, this engineering expertise, you know, we're the ones thinking about ecosystem and compliance and privacy and security. That's our baggage, and we are the experts in that. And we build these scalable widgets that can be ingested super easily by the product teams to help them do exactly what you're saying before, sort of the innovative stuff that we're moving towards. Part of it, which you were touching on, which is not my role as a content designer, someone else's role, to make those connections at a high level and make sure that their product managers know about the capabilities that we can help them power.
Okay, cool. So, because that's a similar story to how we have our platform teams now, is that it was just like a engineering API team. But then we definitely saw the value in having like a design lens like over those same problems, right? Because they could just make something that functionally works, but no one adopts it because it's like, this doesn't help me innovate. Like, this API does not help me innovate, right?
Yeah.
And having that design lens, like you mentioned, thinking about all the human aspects, like the downstream implications of like this technology working a certain way, is like great to have designers and like information architects and content designers worrying about, right? Beyond the UI. Now, I definitely want to give you a chance to shine on your specific role as a content designer.
My actual job.
Yeah.
Like, caveat to everything I just said, I'm a content designer. I'm not a PM or an engineer. I did my best answering those questions, but I am a big nerd, so I do know a fair amount of that. But anywho, talking about content design as it pertains to platform. You know, working in a platform and systemizing stuff, I touched on it a little bit, sort of the fun part of being a content designer in this space. It's like, you know, growing space. I think a lot of why content design and design really in general gets to be so strategic in the platform space is it's sort of like burgeoning. You know, we're not a huge product that has existed for decades that, you know, has gotten it down to a science how we operate. It's almost like being at a startup instead of a huge company. Which is super fun. It's not, like I was saying before, how the working just on the words on the screens and getting to expand my expertise to really help craft what the experience will be for different use cases. But the fun part, so there is a way to make a cohesive content design strategy across your platform experiences, which is something I've been having a lot of fun doing this last year. So I've talked about all the experiences that we touch on in platform, and it sounds like a lot of different experiences. Like, I got sign in, create account, identity proofing can pop up like a weasel out of nowhere and bother somebody. Everything in the account manager, which, you know, there's a ton of space, like what are we calling things? What makes sense to people? What helps build that ecosystem mindset? I also have a help space. I've got a bunch of FAQs and help articles that I manage to, you know, support all of these experiences. It sounds like a bunch of different stuff that doesn't have anything in common, but the denominator across all of them is customers' most personal information. When you're saying your account, when customers choose to use an Intuit product, they're choosing to share information with us to help them do their taxes, find their best financial product for them. So that is sort of the common underpinning for all of these things. And so working to build a content design strategy that always keeps that in mind. So the main goal of content design for me in this platform space is building trust, maintaining trust. And that doesn't always look the same in every single experience. There's sort of this natural tension that occurs between scalable designs. Like we were talking about before, the bread and butter of a platform design team is not bespoke designs. Having designs that can work for multiple different use cases to really help empower this innovation. But there's a tension there. Not everything can be scalable. You hit a breaking point at a certain point, and then you need to contextualize your designs. And that's where we get into code complexity I was talking about earlier, where you have to say, hey, engineering partner, I know your life is a lot easier if we have one widget for all the things, but unfortunately, it does not make sense for all of the things. So that's sort of the neat part, I think, for content design is finding those tensions between scalability and contextualization. There's tensions between, a cognitive burden, ton of words on the screen, or, you know, really simplifying and keeping them moving and feeling confident and really paring down your UI with as little verbiage as possible. And then, you know, you're balancing voice and tone. You know, if you're really present product and tone to help with that continuity, you're adding more cognitive burden on the screen because all of a sudden you have more characters onto the screen. And the right answer to that balance is different depending on what the use case is. So there's sort of paralleled balancing acts that I get to play with and try to build a durable strategy for. I said a lot. I hope any of it made sense.
Yeah, there's like that's that will make that's what makes up the day to day, because there's trying to decide if something should be generic and like flexible for multiple use cases, and then there's specific use cases that require more of a contextual treatment, and it might be like for one specific use case, but it sounds like your job is to identify that as a content designer is, I think it's going, I mean, you have a hunch, usually starts off with a hunch, right? Like, I have a hunch that this generic message is not going to be helpful or help the user know what to do next, right?
Yeah, and, you know, having... You always want things to be as scalable as they can. Because like I said before, the whole role of our team is to really empower these product teams to not have to worry about this debate. And we're the experts on how are customers feeling about sharing their sensitive data, feel security and privacy, when do they need reassurance and when do they want to keep moving forward. That's where we've got a research team, and that's where we spend all of our time, is making sure that our designs are helping customers feel confident in these moments. So with all of that centralization, you want your designs and that expertise to scale. But then, you know, finding those moments, exactly how you're saying, where it doesn't make a given design can, you know, it doesn't work for every single use case. And then to introduce that variation, that new logic to it, because it isn't just like, oh, make another version of it. It's building back-end logic. Are they on a known device signing in for the second time this month? Well, they're going to have a completely different experience than if they're on an unknown device and they haven't signed in for a year. They're going to see something different. And based on those situations, I need to work with my engineers and like, hey, we'll introduce new, so it says something different here. It's not as easy as me like writing a new design. I need to kind of state my case to my PD partners, because they're going to have to do stuff on their end to make sure the right thing shows up at the right time.
Yeah. So teach me. So we just hired at Presley Soon, we just hired a content designer, our first one. So teach me how to utilize her more. Because, yeah, I do see those opportunities where there's like all this like fancy logic for like, well, if this error notification would fire in this use case or in this, or if they didn't enter this in, this is what would show up. Is it like whenever I feel like there's something that requires like bespoke messaging, I think even general messaging, but like anytime I see that, should I just reach out to her and be like, hey, what do you think about this use case? Like, how do you organize that work? How do you collaborate better to make sure that
you should invite your content designer to every meeting you're in.
Good.
They are your partner. The key word in content designer is designer.
We're going to need more content designers.
You're damn straight. You will. Yeah. Yes. Everyone does.
That's implication,
right? Here's a PSA. Please do not send completed designs to your content design partner and ask for them to insert words and quote work their magic. Please do not do that.
It's like
that is a shared pain.
Product designers complain about that and then they just push it on and do the same thing.
I get it. It's a newer craft. Like, you can't get a degree in content design. Like, I get it in terms of like the growth of the craft, but I mean, we're your design partners. I feel like content designers have a different lens in how they look at experiences. And I've partnered really closely with product designers and seen flaws in their interactions that they didn't see because I'm looking at it differently. Mm-hmm. I can say, hey, if I phrase this question this way, you don't need these two screens anymore.
Mm.
Like, bringing that conversational lens to your experience can influence your interactions like super early on in your design process.
Yeah, you know, that's super, I mean, so it gets me thinking of like the design thinking framework, right? Well, it's a philosophy, right? And you know, Intuit's really big on teaching all their employees this, where there's a big part of it that I think is very neglected in design. It's the define stage. I feel like a lot of people empathize and they jump into ideation without really defining what the actual problem is. So like you just said, they might empathize and be like, oh, like what screens can I make to make this better? When it's like, maybe it's not a UI problem. Maybe it's a content problem. Or do we even need a UI? Like define the problem first and be like, oh no, this is an information architecture problem. Or this is a engineering problem that's causing us not to be able to. And that's why it's so important that every like one, and I'm sure that's why Intuit like indoctrinates design thinking to not everyone at the company, right? Is figuring out what the actual problem is.
Yeah, and I think that's really helpful. And going back to how that pertains to your collaboration with a content designer, being really crisp on what the problem is and what an ideal solution to that problem might be, and having that perspective will help you know when you are using what I call a content band-aid, more finger quotes for everyone who can't see. I feel like a fair amount of work can be, oh, like something's on fire, something's not working, something's kind of broken. You know what the cheapest fix is? Words. Put more words there. Change the words, add more words. Mm. It's super easy to add to the code. Oh, just like code up a new FAQ and put a learn more on there. And it's a content band-aid. It's not like a true solution to the problem, but it's a cheap fix. No one's going to read those words, man. Let me tell you. I'll be the first one to say it. Like a lot of customers don't read in a given situation, in a given flow. And if you already got a couple lines of content on that screen and you add more, it's probably not going to solve your problem, but it's going to make you feel good. As you can tell, I get a little sassy about it. It's like, asking me to do this work? You know it's not going to solve your problem, right? Okay, cool. I can do more than this, you know?
Oh, man, content band-aids are so common. And the worst part is most companies don't have content designers. So the designer's just making something up.
It's a crappy Band-Aid. That is a not waterproof, store brand Band-Aid.
Not flexible, like if you bend your finger, it falls off kind of Band-Aid. It's fragile, right? And I could think of so many content Band-Aids in our product right now. Is it's like, oh, you know what? We don't feel like the customer understands this. Let's just do this like in-depth pound-for-pound breakdown of how our product works on this page, and it takes up like a whole scrollable page. We'll just explain it to them.
No. No. I mean, the whole power of design is making customers feel confident in doing what they're doing and like keep them moving and feeling confident. That is the goal of all design, regardless of your design craft. And if you are throwing 200 words on your UI, well, that's going to stop someone in their tracks and not make them feel very confident at all, because all of a sudden they got to read a short novel in order to make a decision. So it's like kind of the exact opposite of everyone's shared goal.
Yeah. Like it should be designed in a way that like you don't have to explain it. It's like, it makes me think of that whole like good design's like a joke. Like if you have to explain the joke, then it doesn't work. Like if you have to explain like your value proposition because your UI and the layout didn't just afford it. Like didn't just like, it should just be like, they should be able to intuit, no pun intended. But now I get why the name of the company is called Intuit. But
makes sense.
Yeah, it all makes sense now. They should be able to intuit by going through the experience, like what they're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be so subtle.
If you got to use words to explain to a customer where to navigate to do a thing or which button to select to do a thing, like you ought to just look at your interface again. Like there's a lot of, obviously I love words. It's what I do for a living. Words are the reason I'm so lucky to work at a company like Intuit, but I'll be the first one to say, like, you know, if you just change the interface, you don't need me. Like, that balance there.
Well, yeah, I think that shows that that's part of like your expertise as a designer, is to show like, is to be more of an advisor. Like, hey, you know, I think if you could just make this, if you figure out how to engineer this at the load times just a little bit faster, I think you'd solve your problem. And
yeah. Yeah. There's like, or if you just made the, if the button said this, or if you got rid of this secondary option here, or like, why is this screen even here? Why is it skippable? Can we just make them do it? Can we get like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm always trying to design myself out of a job. That's my my goal.
Well, isn't that crazy? Because that really is like the end function, because a good product isn't like, eventually you have to ship the product, and a good product is adopted, right? And eventually, like, it should stand on its own without the designer having to fix things consistently, right? I think that in a way that is the goal of a designer, is to design yourself out of a job because the product's good enough to stand on its own because it's well designed.
Yeah. My manager's like favorite motto is the best UI is no UI. His name is Andrew Furstenberger. Shout out to Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
No, he's a smart one. If you ever want to talk to somebody who will probably answer the questions more correctly than I did for the first half of this interview.
Yeah. Best interface is no interface, yeah. Which is funny, 'cause that's our, like, mm-hmm. That's a big part of our job. Like, wait, the best content design is like not needing to put content. And you're like, wait, like,
yeah. Do we need this screen? Can we get rid of this screen? Can we, I mean, that's sort of what we were talking about earlier with systems design, and sort of the back end importance of that is just already knowing you. Putting the data to use that you've already chosen to share with us, and not having to have all these duplicate experiences, and really streamline this end-to-end experience that you have with us. And with that solution, which, you know, is influenced by a team of designers, mm-hmm. to have that solution ultimately winds up with no tangible designs.
Right. And just, the technology just works. You're just able to do what you came to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, here's a question I ask every guest, just to wrap this up. What was a career setback that you're glad happened?
Oh my God, I have the best answer for this question. Okay, so me, like every content designer, I mentioned it before, you can't go to school for content design. We're all just a bunch of lucky fools that have wound up in this profession. So me, like a lot of folks, we're not fools, we're very smart. I have a journalism degree and a studio art minor. I started my career working at a magazine, and then I wound up at an art museum doing the marketing for the Museum of Contemporary Art San Diego. And holy smokes, I was going to be a lifer there. It was an arts nonprofit. I think I was making like the lowest salary you're like legally allowed to pay somebody. And I was the happiest little clam. I was going to stay there for the rest of my life and just like live paycheck to paycheck and be super happy. And then they laid me off and I was heartbroken. I cried and cried and cried. I felt like I got broken up with. It was the worst. I was like a grown woman eating ice cream and crying. You would think like something way more terrible had happened, but it was just like my favoriteest job with my favoriteest people kicked me out. And I was so sad. And so after that, I sort of felt like my art school boyfriend broke up with me, and I was like, I'll show them. And I started applying to all these jobs where I had no idea what it meant. Like if I was confused by the job listing, I was like, perfect. And those are the ones that I was applying for. Yes, exactly. And so I wound up in biotech, which, just think of what an art museum is like to work in, and then think of what biotech is like to work in. And that contrast was just like, ugh, it was just so heavy. It was so much. I thought I was like, I don't know. It was hard. It was a hard time. I felt like I had to put on my big girl pantsuit and leave the museum and go to a cubicle space. But ultimately, everything I learned at that job working in biotech is what got me to Intuit, which is now my favorite job ever, more so than the art museum. Adore working here. I feel so lucky that content design is a thing that exists that I can do. I get very passionate and energetic, as you could probably tell by my like endless rambling during this interview. But what got me there?
Bubbly and bouncy. I mean, you can't see it as you listen to this, but you're like very like.
Just happy to be here, man.
Yeah,
I'm just happy to be here.
Love it.
Getting my heart broken by the art museum and winding up in a pantsuit in a cubicle wound up being the best thing to happen to me because everything I learned there got me to where I am at Intuit. So there's that tale.
Perfect. Thank you for sharing that. That's an awesome story. I think not even just for content designers. I think a lot of designers are just lucky. I think we're all like lucky fools until like the universities get smart and they actually create curriculums around this to make traditional paths. We all stumbled into this. Like I stumbled into an actual degree for product design, digital product design, but I still like stumbled into it. It was my fourth major change.
awesome.
And that's awesome. I actually started out as an English major, by the way. I just kind of transitioned into that because I was frustrated that I couldn't edit my WordPress site. So I learned to code and then it waterfalled into making digital products, right? And
I've often said our generation, I feel like MySpace and LiveJournal gave us like basic HTML knowledge. Like, how can I get those little stars to follow people's cursor when they're on my LiveJournal? Or how can I change the button copy on my LiveJournal? I feel like a lot of our generation learned like some basic coding, like how you were mentioning WordPress. It's funny.
Exactly.
But yeah, I feel like and that's why it's such a fun field to work in, because we all have such diverse backgrounds. Like I've never met anyone outside of, the design space or within the product design space that is not just like super energized and super passionate. I've never heard anyone say, that's not my job. We're all just like, yeah, let's get it. And we all come from random backgrounds. Like, you had an English major that you were going after. I studied journalism. What's journalism? No one knows anymore. But here I am, living the dream.
Yeah. No, we're just happy to be here. Right? Like, just
totally.
Like the alternative, like, oh my gosh, I could have been like getting my PhD right now. And oops, that would have sucked. Like, I'm just happy you designed it.
Yeah. Being like a freelance journalist right out of college, I was like, I'm poor. Like, I'm going to die. So poor. And so like, honestly, like just being super honest about it, going from starting my career in journalism to working in tech, dude, like that's a huge, huge monetary shift that I think adds to that. I'm just happy to be here, man. I'm not getting paid a quarter a word anymore.
Yeah. It's like, it's such a big monetary shift, and the job's fun.
Super fun.
Do you ever think you can make a lot of money and like not like compromise on like in your enjoyment in a job? Like, man, more people need to know about this because we need more designers, honestly. So
I know it. Yes. I agree with everything you just said.
Check yes for all the above. Yeah. That's a content joke. I had to explain. Cool. Well, Patricia, thanks again for being on the show. Hope to have you on again. Let's stay in touch. You have a good one.
Totally. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, listeners. Thanks again for listening to another episode of The Way of Product Design. If this episode resonated with you, please share it with your network and write a couple lines on why you found it useful. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to help the show grow, please leave a review on Apple or Google's podcast platforms. As always, thanks for listening. You have a good one.